down, but there's no better time to hit the links. This is Global Golf Radio, presented by Franklin American Mortgage Company with Ned Michaels and Barney Owlery.
Well, that's the truth. It is Global Golf Radio, and it is Wednesday night, and no, they're not playing golf anywhere in the world, but we're going to talk about some golf because that's what we do. And for the next 45 minutes of content and some commercials in there, we're going to hopefully take your mind off of everything that's happening in the world and give you some joy, give you some laughs, something to smile about, at least for a little while. Welcome to Global Golf Radio, Ned Michaels, and somewhere out there is my man, Barney Owlery. I miss you, pal. How are you?
I know. Same here. And Ned, as a matter of fact, it finally dawns on me today, I can't wait to actually shake someone's hand.
I also can't
wait to give someone a hug. I'm a handshaker and a hugger. And again, but we have to respect each other. And so here lately, I wave at people. And then how this situation is also unfolded, that like I'm giving a golf lesson the other day, and instead of, it's so instinctive to say, you know, knock it in, to get the putt to knock it in, but the cup is like raised a full inch above the ground. It's like, now what do you say? And the guy looked at me and goes, bounce it off. And there you go. So those are the times we're living in. So I'm not shaking hands. I'm not hugging. And then instead of knock it in, we're going with bounce it off. And I don't get to see you, but I can't wait until we do.
Agreed, my friend. I think we talked about it some last week. So we're going to try to focus on golf this week. Like I said, just to take our minds off of things for a little while. We will certainly say stay healthy out there, and thoughts and prayers to everybody, especially the first responders, the doctors and nurses who are on the front line of this thing and literally saving lives. And to the leaders of our country, whether you support them, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, whether you're an independent, is frankly completely irrelevant right now. Let's pray for wisdom for our leaders and just send positive mojo that we can, as a global society, move through this and somehow, Barney, become better from it.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
So, there's no golf being played, but that, of course, is not going to stop the two of us from talking about golf. The plan for tonight's show is a little scattered, but guess what? It's Global Golf Radio. It's always pretty scattered. We're going to look back on the year so far that we've had, because there has been quite a few highlight moments, some nice wins, some tough losses, and we're still going to even maybe touch on some of the majors, even though we don't know when and if they're going to be played. And then for your entertainment, Barney, I have an amazing, not an amazing, but a really solid I Am So Stupid that is going to make you laugh out loud. And then, of course, we're going to have a shut your mouth or two, and we're going to talk about Tiger.
Two.
And we're going to discuss Jack Nicklaus, and does Rory belong in that conversation, and who's the next guy to get the career Grand Slam? Because there are a couple out there who have the opportunity, whether it's this year or next year, doesn't matter. We're going to talk about all of that, and you can get involved if you want. The phone lines are open, 615-737-1045, at 615-737-1045. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at Ned Michaels. Barney is at Simplifying Golf.
That's right.
And Barney, let's also give a huge high five to everybody who came out and supported the Tornado fundraiser that we did a couple of weeks ago with Virgil Heron and Joe Hallett and Matt Walter and Zach Radford and the Tennessee Golf Foundation, the Legends Club. I mean, it was fantastic, Barney. Together, all told, we raised almost $20,000.
Yes, because before the coronavirus caused the majority of the nation to start shutting down, well, about a week and a half before that, in the evening of March 2nd to March 3rd in the Nashville area, this incredible tornado that probably damaged, what, about 50-plus miles worth of damage from here to Cookeville?
Yeah.
It maybe even potentially longer, caused so much damage in such a short amount of time, and then also in a short amount of time, you were on the front end of getting a whole team of golf teachers together to donate a day, with the idea that we're trying to donate one day, and the team collectively, sure enough, raised a little over $20,000 to help with the tornado relief.
And it just, it shows that the idea was to get the golf community to come together and to help through golf. And again, you and I don't really know how to operate chainsaws. We certainly don't know how to move electrical wires.
Idea.
I don't know how to build a house. So doing what we know, rallying the golf community to help raise money, but then also to help those who were affected understand that the entire community is behind you, and that we have your back. And that when times are tough, the golf community comes together, and they just have a way of sharing this bond to want to help people. And I don't think there's a better example than the PGA Tour. Over $2 billion given in charity. I mean, that's just what we do. That's just who we are. And so thank you to everybody who participated. And while we were on the air, remember 2 weeks ago, Barney, we each had a call or a text with some heavy donations that were matched. And so to those folks who will remain nameless, thank you so very much. And I will say the ones that impacted me the most were two young men, two young teenagers, if they were even in their teens yet, who came with their allowance money, donated their allowance money to get a lesson and to get to be able to hit stingers with Zach Radford. I mean, that says it all. We got youngsters coming with their allowance money to help the tornado victims. So if we have those kind of young people in our society helping with the tornado victims, it gives me a lot of solace and a lot of peace to know that we're going to make it through this pandemic that we're facing right now. And the societal and economic, I guess the only way to say it is catastrophe that we're facing. But they're good young people in this world, and somehow we're gonna roll through this, and we're going to get better.
That's right. We just need to stay put, stay indoors for a little bit, a little social distancing, and but eventually things, we're going to get over this, and things are going to get better, and can't wait.
What stands out to you so far this year on the PGA Tour? And I guess I'll open it up to the world of golf, but I'm going to specifically put the magnifying glass on the PGA Tour.
Well, what stands out to me is that Rory McIlroy, I seriously thought he was going to win the Masters. Going all the way back to our first show of the year, I had pegged him that he was going to win the Masters.
Yep.
That I think that he was still a little upset when he let the opportunity slip out of his hands 2 years ago with Patrick Reed, that he was right there for the taking. And then the kind of rivalry, maybe it is a rivalry, maybe it isn't a rivalry with Brooks Koepka, I think had Rory McIlroy very focused and very determined and playing very, very well. And I seriously thought that he was going to win the Masters. And so to me, he was on pace to probably be the front runner for probably player of the year with all the top five finishes that he'd accumulated up until the season came to a screeching halt. But to me, he was the story of the year.
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I guess you could make the case that, of course, Tiger at the Zozo, that was the story of the year. It, tying the record set by Sam Snead in terms of wins on the PGA Tour, you could make the case that that was the story of the year. But in terms of just overall week to week, it was Rory McIlroy. He didn't tee it up, and you didn't think, all right, my money's on McIlroy. So, yeah, we both picked McIlroy to win the Masters, and he still may, and we may get a chance at it at some point. But I think the story for me, and I think it's just the story of redemption and a story of hope, and a story that makes you stop and think for a minute that said, you know what, if that guy could do it, then doggone it, I can do it. And it doesn't mean you can win on the PGA Tour, but I'm just talking about in life in general. And that's the story of this Brendan Todd. I mean, this guy was gone, Barney. You and I had a world ranking that was probably higher than Brendan Todd. He was absolutely poof, like gone in the wind kind of deal. And all of a sudden, we see him last season shoot a 61 at the RSM Classic in the Monday qualifier, and then he gets in. And there were little signs of life that Brendan Todd was getting his game back. I had a conversation with Coach Chris Hack, who was the head coach at University of Georgia, who was kind of alluding to, hey, watch out for Brendan Todd. He might be back. Sure enough, he gets his tour card, and then he misses his first, I think it was five cuts. And you're saying, oh, yeah, well, that's too bad. Kind of good story, good comeback, but it just didn't quite have the steam to get over the hump. And he almost wins three times. He already has won twice this year. And I just go back to Bermuda, where he entered the day two behind Harry Higgs on that Sunday. And all he did was open with a par, make seven straight birdies, and shoot 62.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is just, it's just a fantastic story that probably is a little bit under the radar, but it just gives a lot of hope and a lot of inspiration.
No, so that's it. It's amazing that a guy can all of a sudden find confidence in something and then all of a sudden play at that high a level and in that moment become one of the best players in the world from complete obscurity and then all of a sudden get some traction and just run with it and start bulldozing people and accumulating birdies like crazy, and then that's it. And all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, he becomes one of the best players in the world.
Insane. And I love it. I love that. I love that you can still do that. You know, there aren't many places, professional sports-wise, where you can come from the abyss, where you can be gone for a couple of years, and by gone, I mean real gone, and then come back and be one of the best. I just think that's why I love PGA Tour. That's why I love golf. It, to me, is just one of the most, if not the most, democratic sport in the world.
That's right.
You know, if you shot a lower score than I did, then you win.
That's right. Because had it been any other sport, pick any other sport, there's not a scout in the world or a coach or an assistant coach that puts him out there as either a starting quarterback or on one of the top two lines in an NHL team or on a Major League Baseball roster. There's no way. There's no way, because you figure he's done, he's burned out, he's past his prime, it's over, and let's move on and turn the page. But no, not in golf. Because, again, whether you're a little young, little old, you know, whatever it is, again, when you've got an opportunity to play, well, Up, and away we go. And again, what did you shoot? And when you shoot 62, you're going to beat a lot of people.
Especially on Sunday.
Sunday.
So, you know, you're looking back at the season, and don't forget the first event of the year in West Virginia, won by Joaquin Niemann. He won by six. And for the third straight year, again, we're talking about low scores on Sunday. I find this fascinating, though. Joaquin Niemann, who might have the best, most fun name to say in all of golf, Joaquin Niemann. He shot for the third year in a row, 64 on Sunday, and he won by six. Three consecutive tournaments at the Greenbrier. He shot 64 on Sunday, Barney. Come on. Shut your mouth. Shut it. Zip it up and shut it. Of course, that was followed by the Sanderson Farms standalone date, and we knew he was really good. He didn't get his first win at the Sanderson Farms. He has since collected his first win, but Sung J.M., who had a 15-footer to force a playoff, eventually Sebastian Munoz went on to win the Sanderson Farms Championship. But, Barney, this Sung J.M., he won the Arnold Palmer Rookie of the Year Award last season. But you got to think what we saw in the President's Cup and what we've seen since with his first win, nothing but the sky is the limit for this young man.
Oh, and then that's it. To get the nickname, the Machine, and then the week before Bay Hill at the Honda Classic, and then he darn near almost won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And so, again, now Sung J.M. is a world-class player. He's only about to get better. And he's another one that this shutdown hurts him, because I think he was about to have a great, great year himself.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. You'll believe the I am so stupid that I have for you tonight, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to make you wait for it. Let's go pay a couple bills, and when we come back on Global Golf Radio, one of the most underappreciated stories of the year, but certainly one of the most poignant, one of the most emotional. It happened early in the season at the Safeway Open. That's where we're going next, so stick with us.
Hello.
Global Golf Radio on a Wednesday night. Ned Michaels, Barney Allery, and our man Ryan Albanese. He is braving the studio. He's the only man there. Ryan Albanese, thank you so much for being there, getting the show going, and pressing buttons at the right time. Some people who are still learning to do that, and we're going to let them learn. 615-737-1045 if you want to get involved. Obviously, no golf being played, at least at the highest level on the LPGA, the PGA tours, the European tours, anywhere in the world. So Barney and I are looking through kind of the year, the season, I should say, that has been on the PGA Tour, because it has been a season of terrific stories, of breakout years, of comeback years. And one story in particular, Barney, it really jumps off the page in terms of tear-jerking and the emotional side of it. That was out the Safeway Open where Cameron Champ won for the second time on the PGA Tour. While his grandfather was sick and in hospice, he birdied the last hole to force a playoff and then won the event. Impressive stuff. Excuse me. I said he birdied to force a playoff. Of course, he birdied the last hole to win. So beg your pardon on that. He birdied the last hole to win over your countryman, nonetheless, Adam Hadwin.
That's right. He sure did. But Cameron Champ, who just impressed us so incredibly much in his previous win there at the Sanderson Farms in Mississippi. And so, again, everyone had very, very, very high expectations for this young man and still do. But then in this particular situation with the win at the Safeway, again, with the situation happening with his grandfather, it was just, honestly, it was like a story straight out of a movie, and it was wonderful. And congratulations to him for being able to, for all I know, actually even focus harder and better in that situation. And he pulled it off, and it was great.
Ripped a 369-yard drive on that final hole, the par 5.
Why, sure. Why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't you? The emotional aspect of it was after he won, his dad was there, and his dad had his grandfather on the phone. And
yeah, it was awesome.
What a present to the whole family, honestly.
The reality is Cameron Champ could probably go on and win the Grand Slam someday, and you never know, he just might. But this will and would forever be one of his favorite victories of all time.
Some other young players have come to our attention. I'm going to start with Victor Hovland. 19 straight rounds in the 60s. Barney, that is amazing at your local putt-putt, but on the PGA Tour, that's incredible. It broke Bob Estes' record. Victor Hovland now a winner on the PGA Tour. What do you expect out of this young man?
Oh, he's another sort of a ball-hitting machine. He is so good, hits it so far and straight off the tee, and then that sets up everything else, and he's a proven winner. It wasn't all that long ago he went to the U.S. Amateur out of Pebble Beach. And then he's got a smile that just absolutely lights up a room. And I forget what the quote was of Andrew Beef Johnson and what he said that one time, something like, your face must hurt at the end of the day from smiling so much, something to that effect. But Victor Hovland, he's, him, Matthew Wolff, and Colin Morikawa, those three in particular, are going to be ones to watch, and it's going to be amazing to see their growth and improvement and what they're going to do in the world of golf.
Yeah, when we get back to it, it's going to be very exciting, because you also get the sense that, hoping, knock on wood, that we're able to get back to it late in the summertime, maybe in the fall, who knows? And again, I'm speculating here. I'm certainly not speaking for any tour or anybody. I'm just speaking out of hope. But if indeed they're able to get a lot of these events lined up, Barney, it could be a thrilling finish and I guess kind of start to the PGA Tour season with the majors in there. And if they keep the Ryder Cup in there, we could be in store for something special. And as you said, something that's going to help us propel ourselves out of where we are right now with this pandemic.
And I also have to believe that all of the players, and with that being said, all of the athletes in every other sport, that they are so eager. And of course, us as spectators are eager to cheer them on, but the players, boy, they can't wait. They cannot wait, because at the end of the day, they're performers. In a similar way that others sing, others play instruments and stuff like that, those guys, they're performers. And the greater the stage for some of them, the greater the performance. And they cannot wait to get inside the ropes and show the rest of the world what they can do, as well as what they've been working on in this downtime.
So from the Safeway Open, we went to the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open, where Kevin Na, he just made everything that he looked at. That's pretty much all it boiled down to. He set a record for feet of putts made in 72 holes with 558 feet. He made strokes gained putting like plus 14.
Yeah.
Just absolutely insane. He was a guy who you thought maybe was going to get pegged to be picked for the President's Cup. He did not make the team, but we'll get to that in a minute. The Houston Open, that came next. And this Lonto Griffin, it was his first ever top 10 on the PGA Tour, and he turned it into a win. That'll work.
Yes. And so another story of persistence that again, we marvel and are fascinated at these players' talents. And don't get me wrong, they are. But the determination that they also have to just keep going and the persistence. And Lonto Griffin is one of those stories.
The man had less than $1,000 to his name. 4 years ago, he was done. He was quitting golf. He was researching what career path he wanted to go down. And now he's a PGA Tour winner, and he has Nashville actually, Barney, a lot to thank for that.
Right.
Because remember, he came to Nashville 4 years ago. He made the cut on the number at Nashville Golf and Athletic, and then he ended up winning the event. And then following year, he comes back and he finishes second. So
yes.
Nashville, Mr. Griffin, you're welcome.
And he was not that far away that, like another mini tour player had told us one time, that his wife looks at him and says, "Have you ever thought of doing something else?" He was not that far away that conversation could have happened.
By the way, not to make light of the situation, but I think we have to treat it with some humor. How many wives do you think are saying that to their husbands right now during this quarantine phase? Have you ever thought about doing something else, like getting out of my way and going into a different room?
Yes, I totally agree. You're right.
Well, from Houston, of course, we went over to Jeju Island in Korea, the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges. Justin Thomas won. You remember that anomaly when Justin Thomas, his first four or five wins on the PGA Tour, none of them were in the continental United States?
Yes.
He won in Korea, he won in Hawaii. What a bizarre anomaly. But now, of course, he's been, number one in the FedEx Cup for 30 weeks throughout his entire career. And I think only Tiger and Jimmy Walker, there might be one other who I'm missing, have done that. But Justin Thomas is now one of the preeminent players in the game.
So here's a nice little one for Justin Thomas. By all accounts, ask anyone, and I think most everyone would agree that, yeah, we're going to consider Justin Thomas as being a pretty darn good player, right? But did you know that Mark Calcavecchia, David Duval, David Toms, when it was all said and done, those three players in particular all had 13 wins. Do you know that the next time Justin Thomas wins, it will be his 13th win, and he's only 26 years old?
Shut your mouth. Give me those names again.
Shut your mouth. What's that?
Give me those names again.
Mark Calcavecchia. Mark Calcavecchia, former British Open champion. David Duval, former world number one win. Holy cow, that was not that easy to do when Tiger Woods was playing, and British Open winner himself. David Toms, PGA champion winner. All those three guys, three very, very, very successful guys, all when it was all said and done, those three players had 13 career wins. And Justin Thomas's next win will tie those guys.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And the name I forgot was Dustin Johnson, by the way. Players spent 30 weeks or more at number one in the FedEx Cup points race. Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods. Just an impressive feat, and of course, Jimmy Walker. So from Korea, we went to the Zozo Championship in Japan, where Tiger, well, he won. He was the story. And I think the best picture from the Zozo Championship, Barney, and you pointed it out, I think you may have put it on your Twitter page, was a picture of Tiger hitting a putt or a chip, and literally they're 35 deep, and everybody's got their phone out taking a picture of Tiger, and all we can think about besides Tiger winning and tying the record was, man, the golf in the Olympics is going to be amazing.
The picture that you're referring to, because I'm sure many of you have not seen that picture, but this, let me put it this way, this is way before social distancing, because you literally have, in this picture, easily several hundreds of people, and they are literally all shoulder to shoulder. But the fascinating thing about that picture, every pair of eyeballs is on Tiger Woods. And I think in that moment, I think he's just kind of even just like standing there. But there's not one guy in the crowd that has his head turned looking at something else, whether it be a tree, a bird, or another player, anything. It was amazing to see the crowd gravitate and hypnotized by Tiger Woods, and rightfully so, because he put on a clinic at the Zozo, and as I recall it, he won the tournament with ease, it seemed. And again, what a historic win.
And you would say, okay, first time we're going to Japan. Like I've played in Japan. I've played the Asian Tour, the European Tour. I know what they're like in Japan in terms of how much they love the game of golf, especially at the professional level. So if you wanted to script here's how the tournament's going to go, Tiger's going to win, and he's going to beat Hideki and Rory. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have written this if you were a screenwriter, and that's how it played out. And so you have to think that this tournament is going to be a long-standing relationship and have a good spot on the PGA Tour calendar in years to come. Japan, we went to Bermuda. We've already touched on it. I won't gloss over it. I will certainly give Brendan Todd his due. That final round was astonishing. But, again, we've already talked about it, so we'll move on. McIlroy got a win late October, early November at the World Golf Championship, HSBC Champions, and that was really just the sign of what was coming for McIlroy to this point so far in the season.
Yes, and little did we know at the time that all of a sudden, just a little bit prior to that, Brooks Koepka all of a sudden has a left knee issue, and then Rory McIlroy wins the HSBC, and little did we know that all of a sudden those two players are going in complete opposite directions, that Brooks Koepka is one that benefits from this little shutdown, that he gets to rehab his knee, get his game back in shape, whereas McIlroy, wow, he all of a sudden caught some fire and blazing a trail.
I feel like as golf fans, we kind of got gypped out of something special there. Meaning, McIlroy, what was the quote that Koepka said? Or McIlroy, I can't remember which one of who said it was. I don't really see a rivalry there. Was it Koepka who said
that
it, right?
Koepka.
Yeah, Koepka. I don't really see a rivalry there.
He says, look, I've been on tour since, 2015? And he goes, he hadn't won a major since. And then he says, and I've got four. And then in that same interview, as I recall it, he comes up and says, I'm number one in the world, and all I see is open road in front of me.
That's right. God, that's amazing. And so as golf fans, we were so pumped. We were so ready to see this non-competition/definite rivalry evolve and play out in front of us. And we didn't get to see it because Koepka got hurt, and now we're not going to get to see it. Again, this is a nothing compared to what the world is facing. But for a few minutes here on Global Golf Radio, we're trying to take our minds off of it and pretend that there's some business as usual. And to have that Koepka McIlroy in full flight, that rivalry, man, that would have been awesome. And you sprinkle in some Tiger Woods, and Justin Thomas and John Rahm. I like what you're cooking.
That's right. Ned, so, is it time to go pay some more bills?
Yeah, let's go one more tournament, because then we'll be able to get back to the United States. From Japan, we went to China. From China, we went to Playa del Carmen, Mexico, for the Mayakoba Golf Classic, where Brendan Todd won for the second time. And, again, we've touched on his story already a couple of times throughout the show, but I think you could have bet anything you wanted down in Mississippi, and you wouldn't have believed the odds you could have gotten. Brendan Todd's going to win twice before December on the PGA Tour this season. I don't even think his wife would have taken that bet.
Not exactly.
Incredible. All right, we come back, we'll pick it up with the RSM Classic. A couple more. Shut your mouth. And Barney, I hope you've got an I am so stupid that can top mine, because mine is mine's impressive.
Okay.
Stick with us. Global Golf Radio right here on 104.5 The Zone.
Taco Bell.
Making the turn on Global Golf Radio. Thanks for spending your Wednesday evening with us. Ned Michaels, Barney Allery. Somewhere back there behind the glass is Ryan Albanese. This segment is brought to you by Visit Mississippi. And Barney, we were slated to go down there. We were supposed to be in Mississippi just a couple of weeks ago for the PGA Tour Champions Tour. We were going to play in the Pro-Am, and we were going to be at the Rapiscan, and we were going to get to eat all the wonderful seafood, get to stay at the Beau Rivage, place our bets for who was going to win the Players Championship, who might take home a major, and, of course, for the rest of the PGA Tour season. We're not going to get to do that, but eventually we will, and there's a ton going on down in Mississippi. So just check them out. Visit Mississippi.org, and when we come out of this hibernation and we whip this coronavirus, then, Barney, then we'll take our trip to Mississippi. How's that sound?
Can't wait.
I'm in. Okay, so I can't wait anymore. I got to tell you my I am so stupid. So, as you know, I've retreated with my family up to the North Carolina mountains to a mountain house that our family has. And there's a nice big fireplace. And so each day I've been making fires because it's been kind of chilly up here, and just sitting by the fire and, I guess, reflecting on life, doing a little bit of work, but was running out of firewood. So I called the company who normally will give firewood, or I emailed them. I didn't hear back from them. So I said, 2 days later, I hadn't heard back from them. I got to find some firewood. So next to the grocery store, there's a sign that says firewood, and there's a phone number. So call this company. Sure, we can deliver firewood, no problem. And they say, it's $250. And I'm thinking, well, God, that better be a lot of firewood. You can leave a check or cash for us just where you want us to put the firewood out in front of the house. So I said, well, how much is that? How much wood do I get with this $250? And he says, normally kind of 8 feet wide and 4 feet tall. I said, all right, that doesn't sound like that much wood. That's the deal. Barney, they unloaded wood for 30 minutes. They had a dolly that they had to use for the wood. Yeah, 8 feet wide is a lot wider than I thought. So I now had two massive stacks of firewood almost all the way out in front of the front door. A lot of firewood, but I'm like, okay, that, you know. Well, guess what happens today? The other company comes and delivers their firewood. Because I had forgotten to tell them, no, don't bother, I didn't hear from you. You can't barely get in our front door. I'll post a picture of it on Twitter. You're going to look at it and say, oh, my God, Ned, you are so stupid. There's more firewood that you could possibly use for an entire year, and it is all stacked up in front of the front door now.
Perfect.
So you got $500 perfect. Worth of firewood. Perfect.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I am so stupid.
Good one, Ned.
Where were we? RSM Classic. We're back in the United States. Tyler Duncan. He clipped Brendan Todd, was looking for his third win of the season, his second back-to-back. I think it was the first since in consecutive weeks. It actually would have been three consecutive weeks, because remember, Bermuda was the same time as the World Golf Championship HSBC Champions. So for Brendan Todd, he won in Bermuda, and then he won his following event in the Mayakoba Golf Classic. So it would have been three straight weeks in a row. Last player to do something like that was David Duval years ago. But Tyler Duncan, he got it done, an incredible story. And that's really what some of these fall series events are meant to do, to allow some of the rookies, to allow some of the younger players to break through and allow players like Brendan Todd to come back.
That's right.
Hero World Challenge, although not an official event, it was Henrik Stenson. Nice to see him back in the winner's circle. And, of course, then it was the President's Cup. The United States barely snuck that out. It was
a terrific event.
Terrific event. I think it may have revitalized and saved a lot of the President's Cup.
Ernie Els had the international team set and ready to go, and he came close to pushing all the right buttons at the right time. And this thing had a chance to be done before it ever got started. But the U.S. on the final day in singles, they turned it around and pulled off the win.
So for the sake of time, we won't skip this calendar year, but I'm going to just rip off some of the names, and Barney, you pick out who you want to talk about. It was Century Tournament of Champions, Justin Thomas.
Yep.
Sony Open in Hawaii, Cameron Smith, the Australian.
Yep.
American Express, Andrew Landry almost blew it, but he got it together and won.
Yep.
Farmers Insurance Open was won by Leishman. Waste Management,
yep,
Phoenix Open, Webb Simpson, he collects the win. He's probably been under the radar the most consistent player in the world the last 12 months. Nick Taylor, your fellow Canadian. He played beautifully on Sunday at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am.
Yep.
The Genesis Invitational, Adam Scott back in the winner's circle. The aforementioned Victor Hovland, he won in Puerto Rico in February. The World Golf Championship, Mexico Championship, Patrick Reed was astonishing on the green. Absolutely unworldly. Sung J.M., last year's Rookie of the Year, won the Honda Classic. And the last event that was played and completed, Terrell Hatton, he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard. So of those events, which ones do you want to focus in on?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've actually got one in particular, and sure enough, it is Patrick Reed in Mexico, because did you also know, did you remember that he was actually negative 1.01 strokes gained off the tee, and out of the 628 shot length tournaments of all time, only two players won with a worse number off the tee. And when he had, and so basically when it's all said and done, when he had 45 one-putt greens, that was the most by any PGA Tour winner in the last 30 years.
Shut your mouth.
I got another shut your mouth that happened in Mexico. Are you ready for this one?
Yep.
Do you remember when John Rahm makes a hole-in-one on his way to shooting a 61 in Mexico? Did you also realize that he birdied the three other par threes, which made his par three scoring average 1.75. Shut your mouth. Are you serious?
Oh, that's so good.
Hey, he played four par threes in seven shots. Come on. Come on. He's got a one and three twos.
Oh, that's beautiful. That might be the shut your mouth when it's all said and done. That might be the shut your mouth of the year. What'd you play the par threes in? What was your average? 1.75. Oh, you mean 2.75? No. You heard me right. 1.75.
Because I remembered looking at his scorecard when he shot the 61, and I think he actually had two pars on two par fives, I think. But I don't know that I bothered to look and see how he did on the par threes. And then that's it. And so I happened to stumble on the stat just earlier today. And, I mean, that's unprecedented. I've never heard of anything like that. Come on.
Incredible.
Shut your mouth.
Shut it. All right, we're going to go take another break because we have to. They're making us. Otherwise, we'd stay here and we just talk golf pretty much all night. But they do make us take occasional breaks so that you all can run to your refrigerator, get yourself a bottle of water, make a little turkey sandwich evening snack. And when we come back, Barney, you're going to bring it in, and you're going to surprise me with what direction you want to go and what you want to talk about. Sound like a deal?
Perfect.
Done.
You got it.
Former NFL.
All right, everyone. You're listening to Global Golf Radio. I'm Barney Allen. I'm joined by Ned Michaels. We're standing on 18T, and I've got some stats that you can use. I've got stats that are going to make you say, shut your mouth. And, Ned, I'm ready to go rapid fire. Are you ready for me?
Ready. Let's do it.
So I've got stats, some of which pertain to Tiger Woods, the greatness of Tiger Woods. I've also got some stats pertaining to the greatness of Jack Nicklaus. I've also got a stat pertaining to the greatness of Mickey Wright, who sadly and unfortunately passed away on us there earlier this year. And then I've got a few other miscellaneous stats, but Tiger Woods, Ned. Of course we remember the season of 2000 and Tiger Woods' greatness. I lived it. I was there. It's not like I was in a coma for 6 months, but even I remember, or even I forget that, did you know that in 2000, Tiger Woods was ranked first, and get this, because the list is long, first in scoring average, first in total driving, first in greens and regulation, first in birdie conversion percentage, first in birdie average, first in par 3 scoring, par 4 scoring, par 5 scoring, and of course, total eagles, first in birdie or better percentage, first in front nine scoring, first in back nine scoring, first in bounce back percentage, first in stroke differential and field average, first in birdie to bogey ratio, first in bogey avoided, and first in top 10 finishes. Ned, I think I just reeled off 17 categories he was first in. When you're first in par 3 scoring, par 4 scoring, par 5 scoring, front nine scoring, back nine scoring, you win! You win! And it's not even close.
Not even close. I think it's he was number one and Phil was number two. And the difference between he and Phil in terms of the world golf rankings was the difference between Phil and the last person on that ranking or something along those lines. Absolutely astonishing.
It's like Kramer on Seinfeld when the realization that he's doing karate against children. It's the exact same thing. But now I got something else on you about Tiger Woods. And again, some of his accomplishments are just beyond belief. But do you realize that when he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational for four consecutive years in 2003, that it was the first time that someone had won the same event for 4 years in a row since Gene Sarazen won the Miami Open from 1927 to 1930. Gene Sarazen, the guy that invented the sand wedge. Come on, shut your mouth. I mean, come on, are you serious? Here's another little Tiger Woods one for you. Most 36-hole leads on the PGA Tour in the last 15 years. Believe it or not, Matt Kuchar has 15 36-hole leads. He converted that into three wins. Phil Mickelson has 15 36-hole leads. That turned into eight wins. Jim Furyk has had 16 36-hole leads in the last 15 years and only converted that into two wins.
Yeah, but to be fair, let me stop you. Let me stop you before you get to be fair. Remember the stroke average of those losses for Jim Furyk and his 54-hole lead, and not fair to call them losses. I will call them wins by the other players. The other players averaged 65.4 in those final rounds. So Jim Furyk,
yes, I'm not
didn't
saying
beat
it's
himself
all on him necessarily, but nonetheless, the record books, that's what they show. And then the record books continue to show that Dustin Johnson has had 19 36-hole leads. He converted that into nine. And go figure that Tiger Woods is number one in that stat, too. In the last 15 years, he's had 26 36-hole leads and has converted that into 18 wins. Pretty good.
That's impressive.
Now, you ready to look at Jack Nicklaus a little bit?
Yeah, but I have the shut your mouth for Jack Nicklaus. I don't care how many stats you give me. And coincidentally, it also matches something that Mickey Wright did. But you go first.
Did you know how many times Jack Nicklaus was the PGA Tour leading money winner?
This is gonna be very humbling. Tell me.
Eight.
Oh, my gosh.
Eight-time PGA Tour leading money winner, and evidently in about a 12-year stretch, PGA Tour leading money winner in 64, 65, 67, 71, 72, 73, 75, 76, 71, 72, 73, 75, 76. The only one he didn't win in that stretch in 74. I would presume it was Johnny Miller, Lee Trevino, Tom Weisskopf, or someone of that like that probably won in 74. That's pretty good. Also, Jack Nicklaus, five-time PGA Player of the Year in 67, 72, 73, 75, 76. And then, but the thing that impressed me the most about Jack, well, again, there's so many things that impressed me about Jack Nicklaus. But in the majors in the 1970s, on what I have to presume is 31 different golf courses, of course, the Masters, all of them were played at Augusta National, and then I presume a variety of 10 different courses for the U.S. Open, British Open, in PGA Championships. So 31 different golf courses. Ned, he won 8 out of the 40, basically. 35 out of the 40 is a top 10. He's only got one missed cut. And then if you want to extend top 10 into, like, top 13, 37 of the events, he was tied for 13th or better. The only three was a tie for 49th, a tie for 65th, and one missed cut. Those were his three worst performances out of 40 majors on 31 different golf courses for a decade, all the while raising a huge family. Shut your mouth.
That is astonishingly impressive.
That's crazy.
It's impressive, but it's not as impressive as what I'm getting ready to drop on you, Barney.
Fire away.
And you already know it, but I love this. It's not a stat, but I just love this little nugget. It was given to us by, at the time, he was the historian for the USGA. He has now since elevated himself and been promoted within the USGA, as he should be, fantastically capable. Mike Trostel told me that Jack Nicklaus used the same three wood to win every single one of his majors. Let that sink in. The last one he won was in 86. He was using the same three wood. Now, what does it have in common with Mickey Wright? Well, she just passed away, and I happened to be up at the golf house in New Jersey where the USGA, their home base, is, and they have a Mickey Wright room in the museum. So I spent 40 minutes in there just kind of soaking it in and remembering how amazing she was. Barney, she used the same set of Wilson Staff clubs for all but one of her tournament victories from 1963 to 1995. It's almost 30 years she used the same set of clubs, and they asked her why she didn't change. She said, well, if you have a set of clubs that feels good, why fiddle with it? She used them for 30 years. Just about every single one of her wins, except for one, came with the same set of clubs. Guys get new wedges every week now. Guys trade drivers every month. She had the same set of clubs for all but one of her wins. It's incredible. Shut your mouth.
That is incredible. And so speaking of Mickey Wright, here's the one that I have for you that a lot of people fail to realize. She retired from full-time golf at the age of 34, and she had 82 wins, second most all-time, 13 majors, second most all-time, and she won 13 majors, having only played in 33 of them. And out of the 13 majors, she won 5 of them by 5 shots or more.
That's incredible. 5 shots or more?
That's pretty good.
Yes.
That's incredible. It's almost as good as Uncle Classic Barbershop. That's my barbershop. This past segment was brought to you by Uncle Classic Barbershop. Check them out, uncleclassicbarbershop.com. Barney, do I hear the music?
I think I hear the music.
I think that means we have to go. Hey, everybody out there, stay safe. Barney, you do the same, good man.
That's right. We'll see you soon.
See you next week.